Hello?
That was a cool thing about the 80s, you know, like, all those movies were like that.
One way or another, I'm gonna find you. I'm gonna get you one way or another.
Every one of my games, I try to do something brand new.
One way or another, I'm gonna see you.
Best time to get someone, man, when they're well fed and had a couple of wines. Welcome to the Retro Project Podcast. My name is Steve and I am your host. Now today's episode is the second part of our chat with JM DeMatteis. If you haven't heard the first part, go back into iTunes, check it out. You can also download our previous episodes and you can leave us a review if you like the show. Now JM will be with us in just one moment. Until then, I'd like to let you know where you can find us. You can find us on Twitter at Retro Project Pod. You can find us on Facebook at Retro Project Pod. And if you'd like to drop us a line, you can send an email to theretroprojectpod@gmail.com. And like I said, if you like the show, please go back into iTunes, leave us a review. It really does help us out. Now, after this episode, I'll be letting you know who our next guest is, so stick around for that. I think you'll really like it. And now, let's continue our chat with JM DeMatteis. Everything is at our fingertips nowadays. I had a conversation with my daughter not long ago where I've been catching her up with one of my favorite television shows of all time, Quantum Leap.
Oh, that's so funny because my wife loves that show and she's rewatching it right now. Yes.
But what I had to explain to her was, like you were saying, how everything was at our fingertips. There was a particular episode of Quantum Leap that was a two-parter where Sam jumped into a prisoner. And this was the first time he ever met an evil leaper.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a two-parter. The next day, I set the VCR, for those who don't know what it was a big bulky thing that you used to have to tape things on. And if you didn't set it quite right, you were absolutely screwed. Well, my dad decided that he wanted to record a game show that evening instead and completely screwed up the timer that I'd set. So it took me 2.5 years to get to watch the second half of this Quantum Leap episode because I had to track it down. Now, what I'm trying to touch on is it's probably the same as with you with the Beatles, and it was how I actually found out about yourself and other people from DC Comics and Marvel Comics. Is you had to dig deep. You had to actually research.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a YouTube thing where you could just say, Siri, John Lennon,
right.
Siri, George Harrison,
right.
Siri, In My Life, and suddenly you can just listen to In My Life. You had to go to a record store and not just find the record store. Then you had to find the section in the record store where the Beatles albums were kept. Then you had to flick through them one by one and hope that they had a copy of the album there. There was a certain reward.
Yes, absolutely.
That was also the same as with comic books. My first issue of Justice League International, it was issue four with Booster Gold on the cover, turning back, and they were going to be fighting the Royal Flush Gang.
Mm-hmm.
At this stage, I think you were already up to issue 9. International had just happened. I had to hunt issues 1 through 3. And I had to hunt for the rest of them. So my Justice League International collection was issue 4 and then Moving Day. I had to earn the rest of them.
And that's fun, isn't it? It was. When I was in junior high school, and there were no comic book shops then, but there was this used bookstore that was maybe a couple of miles from my house. And they had old comics. And they had these boxes behind the counters, you know? And when I was in the 7th grade was when I got like really deeply into Marvel, sort of the height of the Kirby Marvel time, you know, and they would bring out these boxes. And so maybe Fantastic Four was up to issue, I don't know, 55 or something, but you could look at, see, you know, the Fantastic Four number 10, and they seemed like they must have, they, you know, even though we're just a few years old, they seemed like they must have come out 100 years before, you know what I mean?
And, yeah.
And you would go through this box, and it would, and I remember when I was in junior high, I would sometimes cut out of school, and I remember one day in particular, And my junior high school was way far from this store. So I walked miles. I cut out of school after lunch, walked miles in the pouring rain, you know, took my lunch money. I had a dollar and went through these boxes. And I think I bought like an early X-Men issue for a dollar. But that was like, you know, it was worth walking whatever it was, 5 miles in the rain to go through this box to find the one thing to spend your dollar on, you know? It was pretty cool.
I buy very few comics digitally, but I can appreciate the fact that people can now enjoy comics that way because it means that we've got a history now that is preserved. Nothing will replace the buzz of standing there for 20 minutes, flicking through 100-odd comics and finding that one back issue
that
you've always been looking for.
Right. And I think a lot of people still have that thrill on New Comic Book Day at their local comic shop. You know, they go in and you can't wait. I remember I used to buy mine at what we called in Brooklyn a candy store. It was really like a soda fountain where you could get malteds or egg creams or Coke or whatever. And they'd sell candy and magazines and newspapers and a few junky toys and comics, you know. And you always knew which day the new comics would come in. And some, you know, I remember again, as you're thinking of junior high school, some days, you know, getting off the bus a few stops early so I could go to the candy store and be there and get those books right away and get them home to college. Or the story I told recently, I think it was on, I talked about it on Twitter. I was also junior high, height of Marvel mania for me, and I had pneumonia. I was supposed to stay home from school for like 3 weeks, not go out. It's the dead of winter. My parents went out to dinner or something. My sister maybe went with them. I know she wasn't home. Put on my coat, went out in the freezing cold, walked whatever it was, the 4 blocks, went to the candy store, and picked up a Fantastic Four. And I think it was the first appearance of Captain Marvel and Marvel superheroes. There were a couple, 2 or 3 comics, and I had to have them. I couldn't stay home and not go out and get them. You know, it was such a kick to stand in front of that rack and go, Which one?
Now, you mentioned the rack.
Yeah.
A spinner rack?
No, they didn't have a spinner rack in this store. They had the racks were like attached to the wall. So they were on the wall, all just in order on the wall.
Our day was Thursday, the local news agent. My very first comic book that I ever picked up, well, no, I didn't even pick it up. It got sent to me because I was in love with the Christopher Reeve Superman film that everyone my age was.
Still my favorite superhero movie. Well, you know, because he understood that Superman's greatest powers were charm and decency. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what he exuded, you know? And it was his charm and that inherent decency that he projected that really made his Superman so
but
great.
He is so underrated for his comic timing.
Right. Absolutely.
My first major comic book, and I got all 6 of them, was Man of Steel #1. But I didn't know comic stores existed until Invasion. Because Invasion over here was a comic shop only title. And that's when comic book stores became a part of my life.
Right.
And then once I could drive, every comic book shop became something that I would just hunt and hunt and hunt through. When you got old enough, of course, so you've left lower school and all of this kind of thing. What was the thing that you would drive for? Was it music? Was it because you mentioned the food already? Was it the best burger joint around? Was it the comic book shops? Was it the drive-ins? Was it movie? What was it?
What I drive for? Well, here's the thing. I was not much of a driver. And living in New York City, you didn't really have to drive, although I had plenty of friends that did. But I don't know. So I don't relate to like I'm going to drive to get such and such. But I, you know, I had my passions, and I was, you know, music was certainly a passion. I was playing in bands, and probably driving to gigs is what we did. A lot of driving to gigs all over the city. But, you know, I love music. I never lost my passion for comics. It wasn't like I grew up reading comics, put them away for a few years and came back to them. They were a constant thread for me, you know. And, you know, comics, books, movies, music, those were my obsessions growing up.
You've got obsessions.
Right.
What was the thing that brought you into writing? Was there a book? Was there a person? Was there an inspiration for you? Where you read something or listened to something or heard something and went, I need to be able to put pen to paper?
I don't think there was a something. I mean, there are certainly plenty of writers and musicians that inspired me along the way. Certainly, when I'm talking in terms of music, the Beatles really ratcheted everything up to the next level. Now, it's possible, had I never seen the Beatles, something else would have hit me and I would have wanted to go learn guitar and started writing songs. I don't know. But in terms of creativity in general, I think it's something you're just born with. Because as way back, as early as I could remember, my first passion as a little kid was drawing. I was always drawing through my whole childhood. I was the guy in class that, you know, that was did the pictures that everyone wanted to see what I was drawing at that time. And
you were an artist.
Originally, yeah. I mean, it's nothing that I do now at all, which is interesting. I sometimes think, wouldn't it be nice to get back to that part of my creative brain? But straight through my teenage years, art was a really, really big part of it. And I'm thinking about writing. I think the thing that really got me writing more than anything was I was always creative. So I make my own comics. I had very distinct memories of me and my best friend. You know, we'd write the script together, and I'd draw the comic, and we'd both letter it and color it. You know, with our crayons. I mean, you know. So I was just always creative. And then, you know, when I got guitar lessons, I liked to play. So I was just always drawn to that which was creative. And somewhere along the line, maybe when I was in high school. Especially, I had an English teacher in my senior year that had us start to keep a journal, and I think journaling, even though I liked to write before then, that really sort of uncorked writing for me. Although I have a memory of being really little, I mean probably 6 years old, and going to the big yellow pages, which is the phone directory, and looking for book publishers because I wanted to find the publisher that was going to publish my novel. I don't know where that thought came from in my little head because I certainly wasn't writing a novel at the time, you know. So all those impulses were always there. You know, it was music, it was art, it was writing, it was all those things. I always knew that I was going to do something creative. I remember talking to a friend when I was like 14 and saying, I'm never going to have a 9-to-5 job. It's just not who I am. I can't do it. I won't do it. I'm going to do something creative. I wasn't sure exactly how that was going to manifest, but I knew that's what it was going to be. I have the kind of nervous system that in the 9-to-5 world, I would have been crushed. I would have died, you know. I am very lucky that I have carved out the life for myself that I have because it suits me perfectly, you know. But in a way, like I said, it's what I've been doing since I was 2 years old, you know, living in my imagination. It's the same thread through my whole life.
You've mentioned imagination many, many times over. The classes that you do and the website that you have is actually the Imagination Workshop.
Right, right, which I started doing a few years back. I have not been doing them as often as I would like. And I need to get another one going. But I realized maybe about 6 years ago I was doing an interview with, I think it was at the Museum of Comic Art in the city. And as we were talking, it was like, you know, a two-hour interview talking about everything. And you realize after doing this for a certain amount of time how much you know without realizing that you know it. And I thought, gee, wouldn't it be great to take this information and share it? Because I know when I was starting out trying to figure out how to write comics, I didn't know anything. I didn't even know what a script looked like. You know, I had to make a lot of mistakes before I could get in the door and have great editors like, you know, Len Wein and Paul Levitz teach me. So I thought, wouldn't it be great to share this knowledge? And so I created this weekend workshop called Imagination 101. And I've done it a bunch of times over the years. And it's really, really fun. You know, I keep it a small group, maybe between 5 and 8 people, and we start on a Friday night, we go through Sunday, and we cover everything, sort of metaphysical aspects of writing and the practical aspects. So, you know, from everything, how do you do a script, how do you work with an editor, to where do stories come from, and the whole metaphysical side of things. And it's really fun, and I always end up learning as much as I'm teaching in the course of a weekend.
Yeah.
And recently, I had something interesting. I got invited to go speak at a local Activision studio and talk to these people who make video games and spend the day there and talk to them about story and storytelling. And that was an interesting way to take what I do with the workshop and sort of bend it and twist it a little bit and present it in a new way. And as a result of that, I just got invited to another Activision studio to do the same thing. So this may be a whole other side of things opening up.
You're not just a comic book guy. I mean, you started off as a music critic.
Right, right. That's right. That was an offshoot of, you know, being in rock and roll bands and the fact that I loved writing and could write. Yeah.
You took two things that you loved. It became a gateway for you to become a writer. You've got an early love for comic books. You've got an early love for, you mentioned television was one of the first things that you loved. You wrote for the Superboy television show. You've written for The Brave and the Bold.
Yeah.
You wrote The Twilight Zone.
Oh, I've been writing 15 years doing TV or more. Yeah, yeah. Let's underscore that it was the 1980s Twilight Zone. I wasn't 6 years old writing for Rod Serling. Yeah, that was the first TV script I ever sold, was to the 80s Twilight Zone, yeah.
The recent John Constantine.
Right, which I have to plug, comes out on DVD and Blu-ray and all that stuff on October 9th. One of the best animation projects I've ever been involved in. Really, really happy with it.
I watched that. I went back and watched that in preparation for this because I had
right. Well, those were, what you saw, which was on CW Seed, are just six little episodes, whereas this is a 90-minute full-length movie with a lot more material than you'll ever see on CW Seed. Yeah.
So they're bridging material between
yes.
the episodes.
Yeah. What they're doing, it's an interesting way to do it. What you know, I wrote it as a full-length movie. They broke it up into these mini episodes. They put the first, I think, five or six on CW Seed. And then there'll be seven more that'll be on the CW Seed probably at the end of the year or something. But then in between, out comes this movie, which will have everything from CW Seed plus, I think, 15 minutes more material. So it's a full-length 90-minute film where you'll get a lot more than you get watching the CW Seed episodes.
I enjoyed the hell out of those. And if that's an edited-down version, I know it's a meme
yeah.
nowadays, but sir, shut up and take my money.
Yeah, you know, this is a project that I was talking to somebody about this the other day. Sometimes the process of working on a project is great fun, but maybe the result isn't always what you hope for, but you loved working on it and the people that you work with. And sometimes the end result is really great, but maybe the creative process wasn't great. This was one of those projects where every part of it, I just had such a great time. Working with David Goyer, who was the producer on it, and people at the CW, and they were just great people to work with. The whole creative process was really delightful. I was really happy with the script, and then the thing comes out, and it's really good. So it really, I'm so happy with this project. I mean, it's very dark because it's Constantine, but it's got a lot of humanity. And as you'll see when you see the whole full-length story, it's really an important and emotional story for John Constantine. It's not just running around in demons and magic and things blowing up, you know?
It was one of those ones where every episode I watched the next. And I got to the end and I was kind of like, ah. And I didn't watch the last episode for about a week and a half because I knew it was the last episode.
Right.
And I was like, if I watch this, I'm done with it. You did 7 or 6 Superboy episodes?
Superboy, yeah. I'm trying to think. I think I did 5 Superboys, yeah.
Spider-Man, the animated series. You've done Legion of Superheroes, Brave and the Bold.
Brave and the Bold, Justice League Unlimited, Ben 10, Scooby-Doo. This is my 4th DC animated movie, I think. I'm working on one right now, but I can't say what it is, but I think people will really like it. So, yeah, I've done a lot over the years.
Wow. What if you say what it is and I promise I'll edit it out?
I tell you, when we're done and you shut off the record button, I'll tell you what it is. Yes, absolutely. But I just want to say one thing based on what you were saying about wanting to leave that episode. It has to do with what we were talking about everything being available instantly. There's a lot to be said for, like, television when you only get to see an episode once a week. It allows you to build a sort of connection and a relationship in a very different way. Whereas, you know, Netflix gives you all the episodes. There's the regular TV, it's every week. Hulu may put out 2 or 3 episodes, but then they only put one new one on once a week. And I think, like, if you're watching a show over the course of, say, from October to May, checking in once a week, you build a different kind of relationship with that story and with those characters than if you just binge 20 episodes in a weekend and then forget by Tuesday what you've watched. So I think there's a lot to be said for that.
Oh, yeah, and the journey is important. It's not the destination.
That's really, yeah. I mean, that is, if there's a core to my life, it's my spiritual connection. I am not a religious person, but I am a deeply spiritual person, and that's very, very important to me. And everything else in my life radiates out from that center. And I think that's pretty clear in my work. Yeah.
You said to me that you had until 10:45. It is now 11:00. Okay. And you've been incredibly gracious with the extra time which you've given me.
Happy to do it.
Even I have to let you go.
I will spiritually plug some work before I go, though.
I've had the great pleasure of speaking to you three times now, and it would be completely discourteous of me to not give you the floor, sir, and say, where can people find you? What have you got coming up? And please, you know, the floor is yours.
But how are you going to live if you don't have a floor? I don't know if you're giving me your floor. That was a terrible joke. Let's move along. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. I have my website, jandeantatus.com. Keith Giffen and I are still writing Crazy Scooby Apocalypse for DC. I've got a new original coming out from IDW this month called Impossible Incorporated, illustrated by my buddy Mike Cavallaro, a great artist. Constantine's coming out. I've got episodes of Marvel's current Spider-Man animated series. One was just on a few weeks ago. I've got two more coming up. And I've got another new creator-owned project that I'll be able to talk to you about after October that I'm very excited about. And again, I'm working on a lot of other animated things right now that I can't tell you either, but I'll tell you once you stop pressing the record button. So I guess the big ones now that are plugged are the Constantine movie, which comes out on DVD on October 9th, and Impossible Incorporated, which I think comes out September 17th from IDW.
And I would just like to say, head over to the Imagination Workshops website. You can find that. If you search for JMD Mateus on Google, you will find that. You will find an amazing amount of stories about this gentleman's life.
I forgot one more thing to plug. Because you mentioned the music, and I recently, my wife encouraged me to do this, to put together a YouTube page. She's been coming to conventions recently and taking little videos, so we've been putting videos up on this YouTube page. And then since all my music is on YouTube, I collected that and some old videos that somebody dug up of me performing from years ago. So there's music on there, there's convention videos, there's interviews, there's a whole bunch of things on this YouTube page, and it's brand new and it's got a lot of fun stuff on it, so I wanted to plug that too. You can find it.
That will be in the show notes for the show as well. Go on and buy anything that has the name JMD Mateus following it.
Even if it's just scraps of paper, please buy them.
Digital paper, however it may be. Are you going to be part of the new DC Universe app? Are we seeing some of your works on there, do you know about?
I have no idea. I'm always the last one to know about these things. You know, it's like, oh, did you know this trade paperback's coming out? Well, I have no idea. I read about it like everyone else does. I read online and I suddenly discover that something's been reprinted. So I'm always the last to know about these things.
Just Google JMD Mateus, buy anything that you see with his name on it. And JM, once again, thank you so much for spending the time here having a chat with me today on the Retro Project.
You're very welcome.
And that's the end of our chat with JMD Mateus. Now, you can check out more of JM's stuff by heading over to jmdmateus.com. You can find him on Twitter. You can find him on Facebook. And if you Google JMD Mateus, you will find his work everywhere. So go and pick up some of his books. You really, really won't be disappointed. Our next guest is the very cool Matthew Arvelo. Now, Matthew is the co-founder of Loot Crate. And I think you're really, really going to enjoy that show. Now, so you don't miss that one, head over to iTunes, subscribe to the show, and if you like the show, leave us a review. Now, until then, you can find us on Twitter. We are at Retro Project Pod. You can find us on Facebook at Retro Project Pod, or you can drop us an email at theretroprojectpod@gmail.com. Now, until next time, thank you for listening, and this has been the Retro Project Podcast.